What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The United States has called on Qatar and four Arab states that broke ties and imposed a boycott to end their three-week standoff. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said some of Saudi Arabia's demands to end the dispute will be very difficult for Doha to meet, but he said others provide a basis for dialogue. Saturday, Riyadh, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Egypt issued a 13-point list of grievances that include curbing ties with Iran, closing a Turkish military base, shuttering the Al Jazeera news network, severing ties with groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, and halting the funding and harboring of terrorists. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal said only one nation with influence in the region can intervene to end the crisis, the United States.
The purpose of the dialogue basically is cool it, take away some of those crazy demands because those demands cannot be met, and let's look at only those demands which are realistic, number one, and on which a give and take or some sort of a rapprochement possible.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called the demands an unlawful intervention in Qatar's sovereignty. Meanwhile, his Iranian counterpart, Hassan Rouhani, condemned as unacceptable what he called the siege of Qatar. Iraqi forces are reportedly closing in on the last pockets of Islamic State resistance in western Mosul. The militants are now confined to part of the old city. Iraq said it blocked a series of suicide attacks in the Hayal Tanak neighborhood. An Iraqi general estimates about 350 IS fighters remain. In Colombia, at least 9 people are dead, nearly 30 others still missing, after a ferry carrying dozens of tourists sank Sunday in the Guatapé Reservoir near Medellin. And officials now say 13 people died in an explosion at an illegal coal mine in central Colombia. This is VOA News. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi meets President Donald Trump for the first time Monday at the White House. On the eve of the visit, the Trump administration approved $2 billion in unarmed surveillance drones to New Delhi. Sunday, Mr. Modi met with corporate executives in Washington, including Google CEO Sundar Pichai.
And I think the Prime Minister was looking for insights into how India can attract more foreign investment. And I think there were many good ideas discussed. But I think everyone is excited to invest more in India, and I'm excited at what we all can do together.
Mr. Modi told the executives India has become business-friendly with a minimum government following implementation of thousands of reforms. Rafiq Dasani is a RAND Corporation South Asia analyst.
He primarily refers to the ease of doing business within India. There's now a general services tax, for example, which is a value-added tax that's going to replace over the next several months separate taxes in each state. Now, this is going to make a big difference in the ease of doing business in India.
But he said there are still many barriers to foreign businesses in India. In London, 60 high-rise buildings have failed safety tests in the wake of the June 14, 24-story apartment building blaze that killed nearly 80 residents. British officials are conducting tests on the external cladding of hundreds of high-rise buildings. Mayor Sadiq Khan said there are more concerns than just cladding.
Whether it's fire doors not closing properly, whether it's the structure not being properly built, other changes made. It can't be right in 2017. There are Londoners sleeping in what are ostensibly death traps. That's why it's crucial the government provides the support needed to make these tower blocks as safe as they can be.
Due to safety concerns, thousands of residents have had to be evacuated. The Israeli government has suspended plans for a mixed-gender prayer space at Jerusalem's Western Wall. Men and women currently pray separately. Activists like Anat Hoffman of the Israeli Religious Action Center fought for years for change.
I'm outraged by this government decision. I think it shows cowardice. For 2 years, we negotiated in good faith with the government of Israel.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has instructed a member of his Likud party come up with a new plan. Israel said it attacked Syria military targets Sunday after stray shells landed inside Israeli-controlled Golan Heights. There were no casualties. Israel said it targeted 2 artillery positions and an ammunition truck. It was the second day in a row gunfire drew Israeli retaliation. Saturday, Israeli warplanes destroyed 2 tanks. Despite a low voter turnout, Albania's ruling socialists appears set to win Sunday's parliamentary vote, a result that could give it a mandate to push for judicial reforms vital for future European Union membership. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 26, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi responds to a U.S. State Department travel warning against travel to Burundi.
I do not believe that we have a potential for civil unrest in the country. Of course, as in any other country in the world, we have some level of criminal activity, but that is why we have the police and we have the security forces which are acting against them.
Alain Nyamitwe, Burundi's foreign minister, the East African community is working towards achieving a common market to ease the free movement of goods and people. South Sudan rebels reiterate there can be no dialogue without their leader Riek Machar. And DRC President Joseph Kabila visits South Africa and gets words of support from President Jacob Zuma.
He congratulated our president about the progress that has been made because the enrollment of electors is going very well. This is an achievement that can help us to help the elections.
Lamba Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Burkina Faso begins construction of the largest solar power plant in the Sahel region. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's voice and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's foreign minister says U.S. citizens and other foreigners are welcome to visit Burundi and invest in the country. Alain Nyamitwe says while Burundi, like many other countries, has some level of criminal activities, they do not rise to the level of civil unrest. Last Friday, the U.S. State Department issued a travel advisory warning U.S. citizens against travel to Burundi due to political tensions, political and criminal violence, and the potential for civil unrest. Also last week, an assistant UN Assistant Secretary General Tibroke Zarihorn briefed the Security Council of targeted arrests, arbitrary detention, torture, and ill treatment of real or perceived opposition members and supporters, as well as extrajudicial killings and forced disappearances. Still, Foreign Minister Nyamitwe says the political situation in Burundi is stabilizing. He says some of the information in the travel warning is inaccurate.
First of all, James, I think that is the interpretation of the State Department. I do not believe that we have a potential for civil unrest in the country. Of course, as in any other country in the world, we have some level of criminal activity, but that is why we have the police and we have the security forces which are acting against them. Secondly, I also noticed that it is not a travel ban. It is a travel warning, which, in fact, is an information given to U.S. citizens, as any other government would want to inform their own citizens about some problems that they might encounter when traveling to a particular country. But that depends on the interpretation or the views of the publishing government. All I can say is that Burundi welcomes American citizens as it's open to all the citizens of the world who want to visit the country and invest in the country.
So when the statement says that political situation in Burundi is tenuous and there's sporadic violence throughout the country, including frequent gunfire and grenade attacks by armed groups, this suggests, Mr. Minister, your country is probably unstable?
Again, James, it all depends on who writes that. For instance, when you say frequent, what are the elements that supports the idea of frequency here? I mean, I'm not saying the fact that there might be one or two incidents which might have happened over the last, but I completely dismiss the idea that we're having frequency of those incidents. They are not acceptable, absolutely not, but they are not as frequent as the author of that warning says. Now, on the political side, I mean, we're having a political situation which is, in my mind, in our opinion, stabilizing. I mean, we're no longer in the 2015 election or post-election period. But again, James, and I want to be quoted properly, I am not downplaying or I'm not rationalizing in a manner or another any violent incident or any violent act which might be committed against any citizen, whether the citizen hails from the opposition or from the ruling party.
Mr. Minister, I think one of the issues that continue to plague your country is this dialogue that your government was supposed to be engaged in with the opposition. The fact that it doesn't seem to be moving anywhere. There are different interpretations, some from the East African community, the former president Mkapa. Some reports suggesting that He has blamed your government for being the obstruction to the progress. What's your comment?
Of course, the government has dismissed that interpretation as well. And to begin with, let's interrogate the facts. Since President Kapa took the file into his own hands and tried and organized a number of sessions, the government, per se, has been present in all the sessions except one. And so he cannot conclude by saying that the government is an impediment to the dialogue process. We might have had our differences with consultation, with some parties involved in dialogue, or with some parties who wanted to participate in the dialogue. Because to be frank with you, to be honest with you, we still believe that it would be very much against the principles of democracy to accept in the dialogue or in any dialogue process people who have taken up arms against legitimate institutions.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The East African community is working towards realizing a borderless community. The move will ease the free movement of goods and people within the community. Moses Aviarimana has the story.
Burundi, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and now the new member, South Sudan, are pushing to fully implement the Common Market Protocol, which allows free movement of goods, services and people by November this year. Member states had signed and ratified the protocol, but still implementing the protocol has been a challenge to some partner states. Sovereignty of member states and non-tariff barriers is the major impediment on the easing of transborder trade and free movement of goods in the region. Liberant Fumukeko is the East African Community Secretary General.
There were so many NTBs before. And there was no customs union. Now we are a customs union. If you actually travel from any country of East Africa to another, you can see how smooth customs clearance has become. Because the East Africa as a community has been working together to actually ensure that there can be proper and faster movement of people and goods.
According to the 2016 East African Community Common Market Scorecard that tracks compliance in the movement of capital, services and goods, Burundi had the least number of non-tariff barriers compared to other member states, followed by Rwanda. Single customs territory has been one of the solutions to ease the free movement of goods, as importers have to only pay their taxes once at the port of entry. East African Community Secretary General says the mechanism have been put in place to totally eliminate the non-tariff barriers.
Now goods are moving faster in East Africa, and the customs clearance and all these headaches, I think, have been eliminated for the most part. So mechanisms are in place. At EAC, we have a division which is entirely devoted to customs union with various departments, directorates, which are working on a daily basis to eliminate NTBs and to ensure that tomorrow we are really a fully integrated community.
The Secretary General's Forum provides a structured dialogue between the East African community, private sector organizations, civil society organizations, and other interest groups that includes the youth. Dr. Juma Nyende is the Eastern African Regional Office Director of Local Governments of Africa.
So this annual event is very important because it gives chance, it gives voice to the civil society, to the other interested parties like local governments, to air out their views. So that is a very, very big benefit to be given voice, and there will be a follow-up on these resolutions because it is a structured dialogue. It is a permanent kind of establishment, so the benefits are enormous.
With East African member states committed to implement the Common Market Protocol that facilitates the free movement of goods and people of East Africa, the political will is still needed as member states like Burundi and Rwanda relations continue to deteriorate. This has led to the collapsing of trade between the two countries, as Burundi banned exportation of fruits and vegetables to Rwanda. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Today's Monday, June 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila was in South Africa Sunday, where he got words of praise and support from President Jacob Zuma about the progress Mr. Kabila is making towards political and security stability. President Zuma said while there are still challenges, the DRC government is addressing those challenges with the support from the international community. DRC Information Minister Lambert Mende says Mr. Zuma congratulated President Kabila about the progress being made specifically towards holding elections in the DRC. A December 31, 2016 agreement between the government and the opposition calls for elections to be held this year. But when asked whether those elections will be held, Mende said that question should be addressed to the DRC Elections Commission.
Of course, he congratulated our president about the progress that have been made because the enrollment of electors is going very well. The Electoral Commission is doing well. And they have succeeded in enrolling more than 38 million people out of 45 million that they are expecting to enroll in the voters' registers. So this is an achievement that can help us to hold the elections as it is scheduled.
You'd mentioned the elections. Will those elections be organized to be held, as the president said? Will they really be this year?
I am not able to tell you that election will take place this year or when. Even the president is not able to say so, because in our country it is not the government who schedules elections. It is an independent electoral commission. But the electoral commission gave report that it is really working to finalize the registration of voters, and everything is going well, but till now we have not yet got the final report from the Electoral Commission, but it seems things are going in a very good way.
Of course, there were some people from your country in South Africa who were protesting the visit of your president to South Africa. In fact, not satisfied with what the president of South Africa, the kind of support that the president of South Africa was giving. They think that your president has violated the constitution.
The president did not violate the constitution. And talking of protesters, you know, James, we are a democracy. Where you have a democracy, you have people that can approve and you have people that can protest. This is not an issue that can, show us that things are different than any other country. Even in the United States, I don't think that everybody agree with the policy of the ongoing government. So we saw, I think, 8 or 9 people on the street. This is kidding. If you call it a protest, I don't know what is it. It was just a kind of people, you know, trying to joke. Because you don't go on street 8 people and say there is a protest.
Your government keeps talking about the election, yet you wouldn't say whether the elections can be held this year.
James, I'm repeating to you that in this country, namely Democratic Republic of the Congo, it is not to the government or the president to say when the election is being held. It is to an electoral commission.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, SPLAIO, says rebel leader Riek Machar is not ready to be part of the proposed national dialogue. A report over the weekend said Mr. Machar had accepted to be consulted on the process of the national dialogue aimed at helping resolve the South Sudanese conflict. His comments came after leaders of the National Dialogue Steering Committee officially requested to get his views on the highly anticipated dialogue. Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLMIO, says Machar told the delegation the priority now is to end the civil war and the national dialogue can follow later.
He's not ready to be part of the dialogue because according to his response to the request, so the government requested the committee of the National Dialogue to go and consult Riek Machar if he's going to be able to come or maybe to send a representative to be part of the National Dialogue. But his response was very clear. He said that as much as we believe national dialogue is an important process for the people of South Sudan to engage in, however, it is our considered opinion that the priority is to end the raging genocidal war in the country. National dialogue can come after this war is ended, not while the war is going on.
A spokesman for President Salva Kiir told my colleague on Nightline Africa that the government is willing for you to send any representative, but as far as Riek Machar himself is concerned, the government cannot accept for him to come to the dialogue until he can disavow violence.
Riek Machar is not a violent leader. He is a leader of the people. We have seen the refugees in almost all these countries calling upon the release of Riek Machar from South Africa. The IDPs in South Sudan, they are calling upon the release of Riek Machar from South Africa. If Riek Machar is being wanted to come back home by all these civilians who have realized that without him, this war will not end. Now, who is the government to stop Riek Machar from coming and claiming that Riek Machar is violent? The government is violent. Everyone knows that. That's why we have rebellion coming up. In Western Lake State, there's rebellion. In Awili State, there's already rebellion. They're arresting people here and there. And I know very soon in Juba, all the civilians will be arrested and put because they are resisting the government idea. So whoever is violent is not Riek Machar. It's the government. Kabandenga and his government and also the president. These are people who are violent. They continue harassing civilians, raping civilians, causing atrocities, attacking our opposition. So we're not violent. Riek Machar is not violent completely.
Lieutenant Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He said he was speaking with me from the Uganda-South Sudan border. Burkina Faso has started construction of the largest solar power plant in the Sahel region. The public-private partnership aims to increase access to energy in a country where 80% of the people do not have access to electricity. The director of the UN Environment Africa Office, Juliette Baiho, talks to Ricky Stryak about the potential for this project and other renewable energy initiatives throughout the continent.
This is indeed a big progress if we know that Burkina Faso's economy is really is agricultural-based economy, as in most of the African countries, and that we have really a very great potential for promoting renewable energy and especially the solar energy. The rural sector that accounts for 40% of the GDP and provides livelihood for more than 80% of the population. So having solar energy as a source of energy will be something that will boost the economy of Burkina Faso.
Are there other countries in the Sahel who are trying to develop solar power? And if yes, which countries are doing it the most and how are they doing it?
The studies that we've conducted really show us that many, many African countries are in this path for promoting renewable energy. One of the countries that I can name first is Morocco. We know that Morocco is really doing well in moving toward clean energy. So the shift toward a green economy is something that have embraced Morocco. There are also Mauritania. There is also other countries like Senegal, Mali, and those are countries that when you take, for example, Mauritania, it's not only solar energy, it's also wind energy that is being developed. It's the same also in Morocco. And we have also in Egypt some initiatives that are going on.
This is a private-public partnership in Burkina Faso. What are the benefits but also the risks to that?
The public alone cannot really handle, you know, the transition toward green economy because it required a lot of investment. And for the private sector, this is a great opportunity for business. So I have to say that in general, the way we've been looking at environmental challenges have to change. It has to be looking at as an opportunity for the government to really boost the economic growth, but opportunity also for the private sector where, you know, they can also develop their business. The risks here, we have also the geothermal energy, where sometimes the risks are really huge because you cannot predict whether it will be, you know, the exploration will be successful.
So Juliet Biao, the director of UN Environment Africa office, she was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Nairobi. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with results from the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup, where Cameroon crashed out of the competition following a 3-1 defeat to Germany at the first Olympic Stadium in Sochi, Russia on Sunday evening. As a result, the FIFA World Cup holders advanced as Group B winners, with Chile ending as runners-up following their 1-1 draw with Australia. The African champions played the final 25 minutes with 10 men following the controversial sending-off of Enes Mobuka. Hugo Brass, coach of the Indomitable Lions, says the video assistant referee makes decision taken by the center referee a little bit confusing.
I think everyone is confused, also me. I didn't know what happened there. First of all, I saw a red card, then it was a yellow card, then he came to the jury next to the pitch, then he went again to the player, then he went again a red card for another player. I don't understand it for the moment either, so I have to see again what happens on television. But I think this is something for the referee himself. He and he alone can explain what happens there at that moment.
Tanzania defeated Malawi 2-0 in the first game of the 2017 CASAFA Cup Group A match played at the Mwenge Stadium in South Africa on Sunday, while Angola also began their campaign on a winning note after claiming a 1-0 win over Mauritius. Angola now sits second in Group A due to the inferior goal difference to Tanzania. In today's fixtures, it will be Mozambique versus Zimbabwe, and Madagascar will square up against Seychelles. We stay in South Africa, and let's tell you that SuperSport United were crowned Nedbank Cup champions for the second straight season after they thrashed Orlando Pirates 4-1 in the final at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban, South Africa. And now to Ghana, where Ghanaian international defender Samuel Nkom has been banned from all football-related activity for a year by world governing body FIFA. The 28-year-old, who plays for Bulgarian club FC Vireya, was punished for refusing to pay compensation due to his former agent Andy Evans, worth $65,000, based on an agreement between the two parties. Nkom failed to pay the agent his full share after he was transferred from Ukrainian side Dnipro 3 years ago. And to North Africa, where Al Ahly of Egypt club president Mahmoud Tahir has confirmed that coach Hossam El Badri will remain in charge of Egyptian club giant in the next season. Al Ahly lifted the Egyptian Premier League trophy at Petro Sports Stadium after a 2-2 draw with ENPI on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Burundi's foreign minister says U.S. citizens and other foreigners are welcome to visit Burundi and invest in the country. Alinyamitwe says while Burundi, like many other countries, has some level of criminal activities, they do not rise to the level of civil unrest. Last Friday, the U.S. State Department issued a travel advisory warning U.S. citizens against travel to Burundi due to political tensions and political and criminal violence. And that's it for this Monday, June 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte, wishing you a very productive week.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, a conversation with the Voice of America director, Amanda Bennett, on her recent trip to Africa and VOA's Africa initiatives, including meeting with African government officials, affiliate executives, media members, journalism students, and the African youth.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.